Sooner or Later. This is from his 1973 album, Struggling Man. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and so much to talk about. We're not going to get all of that talking done. But what we'll do is grab off some pieces that we can talk about completely today and leave the rest for tomorrow. Well, as you know, I live in Florida now. I've been here for many years now. And the buzz, everybody is talking about Donald Trump. Oh my gosh, you would think he's already elected. Donald Trump is the talk of the town. Several towns, as a matter of fact. And the newspapers are just thrilled about his performance last night in Orlando, where he declared his candidacy for 2020. Well, I didn't take a survey. I didn't know if every single town in the state was delirious with joy. But I'd say that perusing the papers and the coverage, he got just unbelievable coverage last night. Unbelievable not only in terms of the number of newspapers and news outlets that covered his announcement, but also the fact that it was overwhelmingly positive. He got great, great encouragement last night from the news outlets and from the towns and cities that they cover, overwhelmingly positive. And that tells you something. As you know, we've talked here a lot about Mr. Trump, and not in a good way, but talking about what he brought to his office, which overwhelmingly went against what most people, you would say they're reasonable people, expected. A very repugnant kind of character, taking pride in jabbing people and hurling insults and just crass. A crass person who does not care that he presents a very uncultured profile. In fact, he likes it. He delights in it. He was like that in New York, I remember. He was very brash. He was very, I could do anything I want. You can't do anything to me. I'm just invulnerable. There's just no way to get around me. But let's be fair and let's be really careful to note that with all this stuff going against him, he has prevailed. And he appears to have an extremely loyal base that is reading his messages at several levels. And they like what they hear. And most recently, just on the eve of announcing his candidacy for 2020, he reminded people, he reminded the nation and the world what he's about. He singled out immigrants. He talked about a massive imprisonment program that he intends to carry out to put unlawful immigrants in jail, in prison, as a matter of fact. He talked about making steep cuts, and he's already laid out a lot of his program as was warranted. So he's off again. He's off to running. And I'm not concerned about Donald Trump. In fact, I'm not concerned about the Democratic Party per se and Donald Trump per se. I've already shared with you my view that I'm out. I'm observing because the Democratic Party and other parties have shown little skill or even interest in really going to bat. They talk about it. There's a lot of hoopla about the talk that they're talking about it. But they haven't been scoring points. They wasted a lot of time. They're out of touch with, and this is my view, they're out of touch with working and working poor people and poor people in this country. They haven't amended their ways. They're still being led by people who are living in an entirely different century. And really, I don't see them going to bat. I mean, really ferociously. I see them trying to figure out when and where they can score points, depending on which way the wind is blowing. And it's great, a great disappointment. It's almost predictive of what would happen. So, and I see on the other hand, Trump, his relentlessness, his political base, his attending to the needs of the wealthy, being him being one of them, he and his family being an example. And I see how the country has gone to hell. And therefore, in my view, the practical thing to do would be to look out for ourselves and see, I repeat this all the time, see to our survival. Because whether by intent or by accident, it is being threatened every single day by a hostile administration, which will become even more so, and by a so-called opposition that tells us it is weak, it is tired, it is overwhelmed, it is even, in some cases, out of touch. And no amount of talking, no amount of encouragement is pushing them in the right direction. Only lately and over select issues are they responding? And even so, the response, you get the feeling that it's too little, too late. Now, I'm not condemning the party. I'm saying what I'm observing. And I'm not condemning Donald Trump yet. That's coming probably soon. But I'm saying these are the real things we're grappling with here at this time. And overwhelmingly, it suggests we better get smart about what we do. And the last thing we need to do is to use the last remaining bit of energy and creativity and work that we can perform in this mess to bring, to once again throw ourselves into this mess of a political maelstrom. We don't know what the heck is going on here. We only know that we're stuck. And in this vortex, we just keep going round and round and round like water that's going down the drain. It develops a lot of energy as it goes down the drain. And so the smart thing is to mind our business as voters. We shouldn't wait until the last minute to decide, okay, we're going to take this route. We have to start planning now. What is to happen in this presidential election? And we should begin forecasting what might happen to us as a result of it. And therefore, what are we compelled to do if we take ourselves and our interests seriously? I have decided I am not siding with anybody except me. And that part of the sector that we would call our community. Because I understand what we collectively have been through and what we still are going through. People are not listening to us. They have a feeling that they know exactly what to do, exactly what is wrong, and they don't. And they've been around for so long, they don't need to change their tactics. They don't need to really revisit the mistakes that they have made. And time, literally, we are at the brink. Time almost has run out. So what do we do? Could you blame people who say, well, at least Donald Trump is doing something. He has promised A and he delivered A. Now, mind you, I think it is the worst kind of reasoning there is. But I'm talking about how people come to conclusions about what they would do. Because on the one hand, they're seeing something. It's a lot of public relations. It's a lot of propaganda, but that's what's working. The Democrats aren't doing anything in the way of propaganda. The Democrats have stopped talking about what the Democratic Party is, what it means, what it's doing, and why it needs your support. The Democratic Party hasn't even gone to certain communities. Because the contempt has crept in. Ah, they'll just vote. They're black. They're Latino. They'll vote the Democratic ticket. And instead, they are paying attention to the same people that Trump is paying attention to. But he's got a handle on it. Because why? He is one of them. And he knows their priorities. And he is letting them know that he is faithfully keeping his word with regard to the benefits of siding with Trump. Here we are, right on the cusp of a presidential election, and this Democratic Party is, it's like molasses going uphill in winter. That's how fast they're acting. So I raise this question with you. I mean, I'm certainly open to changing my mind if a credible argument is made. And it can't be. I can't deal with the argument that, well, as bad as the Democratic Party or the Progressive Party or whichever party, as badly as they're performing in these fundamental ways. And what are those ways? Raising money, going into the community and adding more and more names to their list of supporters, dealing with the issues that people are screaming about and have been for years, being visible in the community. We had a call the other day, I think it was Monday, about what's, this issue of the poisoned water in Detroit and in Flint, Michigan. It is mind-boggling that years have passed since the issue was brought to the attention of the world. And we're still talking about it. And it is unfinished business, but people are still being poisoned. That alone should disqualify any party that presumes to have some kind of a foothold in these constituencies. They deserve absolutely no votes, no support, none. You see what I'm saying? This is how I look at politics. I'm not emotional about it. I am, because you just heard me screaming. But in terms of party ideology and identification with party, we haven't held to a whole new standard, although the consequences we have had to bear and our communities have had to bear. Because the party has turned itself off to our pleadings, to our calls for help. The party is not responding. Nancy Pelosi hasn't gone into Flint. We haven't seen a contingent of from the party representing the party going into Haiti saying, all right, let's see what we can learn here. Let's see what we can do. And let's make this a top priority in terms of legislation that we can put forward to assist. No, that's, Haiti's a write-off as far as they're concerned. So we haven't changed our bad habits either. We keep voting and voting and voting for this particular party, thinking somehow things will change. And they don't change. And they haven't changed. But we still keep voting for it. As I said, I'm out. Until this party can capably demonstrate that it has retooled, it has modernized, it has come to recognize that things have changed and they have changed dramatically, putting most of their districts in peril. Until we see some movement there, I'm out. And that goes for the progressives, that goes for other parties as well, that blame everything on the fact that they don't have money and they don't have the personnel to attend community meetings and to become involved in some significant way with the issues that the people have instructed everybody what the issues are. And we see no reaction. And the Democratic Party has not yet realized, not only Trump, but before Trump, their ignoring of the critical issues empowers other parties. It endorses the common sense in the way they see things in politics, the common sense of not wasting time with constituencies from which you won't get anything. And that's the way they feel about our constituencies. That's the way they feel. So I'm not discussing, you know, what Trump is saying versus what any of the, was it 23 Democrats now who are running? And there might be more. I'm not hearing anything particularly instructive, creative, or new. Their campaigns are geared toward winning, meaning their campaigns are geared toward arguing against Trump. That's not a good campaign. The parties will not admit that they haven't done party work in a long time. They haven't educated their membership. They haven't courted new people, bring them in. They are not in communities. They're not representing the interests of poor and working poor people and middle-class people in this country. Their leadership, which is one of wealth, concerns itself with wealth. You'll show me any comprehensive platform that the Democratic Party has on education. Show me. And I'll say, oh, I was wrong. You guys have been fighting, you know, tooth and nail over this issue. But that wouldn't be true. They're fighting on issues that are sexy. And by sexy, I mean issues that would please a certain sector. You know, they're fighting that. They're not fighting about the transformation of the super or hyper gentrification of communities. They're not fighting over that. Just today, I saw a one-bedroom, one-bath walk-up, third-floor walk-up in East Harlem. And they're hyping it as a bargain, going for $1,600 a month. And compared to some of the prices I've seen, It's a bargain. These are the issues that our party should be responding to. That's extremely important. All over New York City, all these neglected communities are under assault. The fight is for not just the buildings, but but buildings for now. The fight is for the land. They're building a whole new urban community, and we are destined to be out of it. So I want to talk about this in the context of your own political perspective of, with Trump announcing last night, and we have the wheels beginning to turn. What are your feelings about what politics has become? You have a whole bunch of people on one side, 23, almost two dozen and more, S still lining up to get the prize. But we don't know what it is that they're fighting for. We know they're fighting against Trump, or they propose to fight against Trump, but that's not enough. That's hardly what we stand for. We want to know not what you're against. What are you for? What have you been for? What victories have you scored? What significant victories have you scored and protected? What turf have you protected? Who benefits? Other than that, I'll go about my merry way, trying in my own way, my own independent, small I, my own independent way to have a life and to survive. I have no use for whatever it is you are talking about as politics. I have no use for it. You bring very little to me. And yet you are expecting a great investment by me in your whatever it is you call politics. The formula is lopsided. And again, I repeat, I'm not in it. Not this time. And it has become an infection, a massive infection. Everywhere this brand of politics has taken over. So you're not safe anywhere in this country. As a citizen who is prepared to participate in helping to shape what we call governance or government, we have no chance. We will not win this fight. Not the way things are going. And they seem to like it that way. They tell us in 2020 they've held a presidential election. There's nothing presidential about it. There's nothing that suggests that politics really tends to its original intent, which is to partner with the people, to arrive at some sensible way of governance. I am taking, for the time being, and I've done for several years now, I have taken the right of self-governance. I'm not involved in that stuff. I find it fascinating, but I'm not involved in it. I won't aid and abet the madness. And I've told the story many times. I walked out of a voting booth when it hit me like a ton of bricks that I was being disrespected as a voter. I was being conned. I was being lied to. I was being manipulated. At least that was the intent. I stopped it. And I vowed then and there, until I see or believe that the people running things or choosing to run things or the system that chooses to run things is cognizant of its duty to understand what it means to govern. I'm not involved. I'm not going to participate in it until there is some discernible reason and meaning in this thing, in this matter called voting. Okay. Let me take a break. Let me be kind to you and take a break, and we come back and we talk from your perspective. What are you thinking? Right after this.
But you're out of time and you're just too late.
Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Nutrice Lead, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are as things develop now and the way things have developed in the past to your own knowledge and experience. And is it enough? Is it the right way to go along, to go around this question of your voting rights? What rights have you that are being respected as a voter? And what is the state of affairs with voting? Do you trust what is happening? Do you feel you have any appreciable power or influence over how things are being managed and directed? And then they tell you it is because you voted and because I voted, we gave them permission to do whatever it is they want to do. So get out of the way, get off their backs, and give them a break. I think we have to revise that definition. But I don't have, at the same time as I'm criticizing the government, I don't see that we're learning anything as the electorate. I don't see us being conscientious about what we say we want, and yet we vote for it. We say we want X, but we vote for Y. And then we get angry when we get why. What is it that is happening? Or maybe I'm losing my mind. What is going on that we have this dissonance between what is expressed and promised, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, what you try to do as a good citizen, abiding by the encouragement of everybody that you should participate and take an active role in this process of governance. And look what we get. And we're about to have another turn of it unless something dramatic happens that energizes the Democrats and energizes interest even in voting. Your thoughts? We have two numbers that you can call, the regular 888-874-4888 and the new number 646-922-8391. 646-922-8391. Let's hear what you have to say. Okay, so the phones are open and we're waiting for you. I want to touch on something that bothered me on Monday, and it was, you know, during a segment when the phone lines were open, and we were talking about a subject that certainly, as most any subject that we talk about, we can see the racial ramifications of these things in the way people are expressing themselves. I got a call, and the caller said, first thing is, greetings to my African brothers and sisters, and said it more than once. I tried to prod him in the right direction by saying, you're talking only to African people? And he said yes. And continued speaking. I was so enraged, I couldn't find myself in a comfortable place to rationally address it. But it offended me on several levels. One, I'm an African American, actually, from the Caribbean. And I grew up in a multicultural society. In my own family, that's the way it is. But even if I were not raised that way, it is offensive, and it lacks manners. I can't imagine myself entering a room and people are coming forward to shake my hand or to greet me, and I say, oh, no, I'm only talking to people from Trinidad. That is racist and very bad manners. And even when somebody gives you a gentle hint that you need to recalibrate quickly so as to not give the impression that you in fact are racist or being racist in that instance, and you say on the air for all to hear that you are fixed in this regard, this is your philosophy, this is the way you are. Well, okay. This is not who we are. And I will say in response, if this is who you are, I encourage you to go and find a compatible scenario where you can be comfortable being who you are. But it's wrong of you to put me in a bad situation. You put me in the wrong spot. And I didn't take you on because I said, let it go. I wouldn't forget it. But it basically challenged me to now descend to your level in an argument over your so-called right to offend people on the basis of race, because you are a super African nationalist. I allowed you to speak and express your opinion, and we closed the program. That did not mean that I forgot it. And since then, We have not heard from the caller saying, on reflection, I gave the bad impression of myself and I offended many people listening. I was, in fact, exercising my right to free speech, they would say. You don't have right to free speech. People are confused about that. You do not have a right to free speech. Go look it up and see. You have permitted speech. You have speech that is allowed, but you do not have an absolute right to free speech. And even if you did have the right to free speech, I would imagine that you also have a mechanism in your mind, your brain, that tells you you shouldn't belittle your right, your so-called right, by being offensive to people, deliberately offensive, because I gave you a chance to fix it, and you didn't, which means you meant it. So I have this to say, on this program, as it was in every single journalistic endeavor in which I have been a part, whether newspapers or television or radio or lecturing, I don't tolerate it. I don't tolerate it. And I won't tolerate it. If offending people on some spurious claim of you being an African man exercising his right to free speech, go where you are compatible with that. You won't be compatible with that here. I guarantee it. So don't do that. You owe the audience an apology for being so offensive. You certainly owe me an apology for utilizing a forum that I am managing to put me in the position now of having to take on, the argument wasn't yet raised, but to take on what everybody would have discerned by then, that I'm somehow reluctant to confront you. I don't have that history. And it won't exist on this program. I am very proud, as I was, as I said, in all my journalistic life. It's for everybody. And we approach each other with respect. It doesn't matter to me where you come from, what your religion is, what your orientation. I don't get involved in all of that. That's nonsense. I'm interested in what you're thinking. And that's universal. If you can't respect that, you don't belong on this program. Thanks for allowing me the opportunity to express those thoughts. Cheryl from Pennsylvania, what are your thoughts about where we are?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you, Eutrice, because I have an illness which I was about to just give up on myself when I heard you on the air saying something to the effect of get up and get yourself some help. And when I heard you say that, I signed up for one of Gary Knowles' retreat, and I felt like when you were talking about that, you were speaking to me, and I did exactly that, and it helped me. And I just want to thank you for saying that on the air and reaching out to people.
Thank you.
Yeah. And the other thing I wanted to say about voting, don't give up, because you are right about the Democratic and Republican Party. And all they are doing is vying for money for the corporations, both parties.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what they're doing.
That's all they're doing. They are fighting with each other over who's going to get the money from the corporations. And neither party is doing anything good for the people. Now, don't give up on your vote, because our people fought long and hard and died, had hoses sicked on them, dogs sicked on them, for us just to have it right. Even if you got to put in Jesus Christ, put somebody in there. You know what I mean? Don't give up that right to vote. If it wasn't that important, they wouldn't be fighting so hard to keep us from voting. Put Noam Chomsky, vote for the Green Party. There are other options. You can write in whoever you want to put in there, but don't ever give up on your vote.
You know, I'm not giving up on my vote.
Okay.
But I also feel I don't want to trivialize it either.
Mm-hmm.
And in, you know, voting for Pepe Le Pew or voting for whoever, to me, it would be trivializing the vote. I want them to know I don't want to vote for any of them.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to know that. And I take your advice very strongly. I may vote, I don't know, but
mm-hmm.
I take your advice
mm-hmm.
very much.
All right. Well, thank you. And I want to reiterate, if the vote wasn't important, they wouldn't be fighting so hard to keep us from voting and take our votes away. I just want
to
thank you.
We have to get something in exchange for it. And it's time to play hardball.
Yeah.
We're not joking. And by that I mean, when you consider what our community has had to go through
mm-hmm.
in order to get the right to vote,
mm-hmm.
And then we are at the point in which we diminish its importance by voting, you know, for, like I said, the fictional characters or people who are dead and gone or people who are not even running. No, mm-hmm. we need to let them know. We do not like you.
Right.
And in the meantime, build and construct a healthy alternative, a real party. We don't have a real party in the sense that we need it.
Mm-hmm.
And inasmuch as they are not paying attention to us, we go
mm-hmm.
our separate ways.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I could take you to communities where nobody votes and they
mm-hmm.
have everything they need.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They don't have to go downtown and beg. They don't have to stage marches and protests. They don't have to beg people to come to their meetings. They're not doing any of that.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody votes. And they have everything they need.
Hmm. Well, I think that what I plan to do is I'm going to register as an independent, and I'm going to let the Democratic Party know that I'm not happy with them, because I'm going to vote something different, Green Party or anything but them.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much, Itchy.
Have you seen the Green Party lately in your community?
I haven't.
Okay. Have you seen a poster?
I have
community. Okay. See, this is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
We have, since they can't of their own free will change their ways, we have to change their ways for them.
This is true.
So we have to get tough.
Yeah.
And we have to insist that our vote is so important.
Yes.
To us. We are not going to allow you to abuse it. We're just not.
Mm-hmm.
Like making us feel like we are obligated to vote for you. We're not. Like I say, I could take you to entire communities, hundreds and hundreds of people, none of them vote. And they have everything they need. Whatever they need from government, they get it.
Well, I see your point, but they don't have the same voting history. And I vote out of respect for, you know, the ancestors who went through all of that for us to vote. And,
yes, I heard that, but you know what? It's an emotional argument. When you boil it down, I don't mean to belittle it, but when you look at it clinically, you see it's an emotional argument. We are voting because we are emotionally hobbled, and that's exactly what they use against us.
Yeah, well, we don't have to vote for them, those people who are not helping us. We don't have to vote for them. I agree with that.
But there you go. So at some point, we have to play serious hardball, and we're ready to cut you off. If it has to be permanent, so be it. But you are not going to take our vote lightly.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to take us for granted. That's where we have to go with these folks today. Thank you, Cheryl, for calling
Thank
in.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
All right. Hello, Bruce. You're on the air.
Hello. Good afternoon, you Utrecht. How are you today?
Okay. How are you doing?
Yeah. Oh, fine, thanks. You Utrecht, I'm afraid I have to disagree with you today on this
okay.
about this call with my aunt, you know? I listen to every one of your programs. Well, okay, whoever it was. Whoever it was, I mean, I wasn't as sure as you seem to be that malice was intended. You know, I got the impression as though the speaker was stumbling over her words and was so concentrated on trying to say what she wanted to say that she said something, and even when you tried to correct her, it didn't register because her mind was something else. I didn't get the impression that malice was intended. And secondly,
no, because it was ingrained. It came across as ingrained. First of all, it was a male caller, not a female. And I made sure to ask the question, and it should have triggered. Let me clean this up right now. That did not happen. In fact, there was a doubling down on that. And I felt it was in very poor spirit. It was very unmannerly. And frankly, it was racist.
Well, I disagree with you because I'm assuming that the caller was a black person, all right?
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, and scientifically, it's not racism means a particular thing, right? Okay, it's a scientific definition, right? In order to be racist, you have to have the military, economic, you have to have power in order to enforce hatred, right? But I don't know any black people anywhere in the world who have power.
I disagree with that definition. But, this is not about anybody having to have an army or a navy or an air force in order to be racist.
Or economic power, yeah, yeah.
You have attitudes that have nothing to do with economics or anything else. It just has to do with your attitudinal disposition.
I've studied this area, you know, at the highest levels, right, at British universities, yeah, okay? So I'm trying to explain to you what the scientific, the definitional in the scientific literature is about. It is not about if you hate somebody. People hate people all the time, right? But we're talking, when you say racism, you're talking about an institutional framework, yeah? Which is different to me hating you or you hating me. I mean, that's a different thing altogether, right?
No. Let's be clear. Even in those instances where people say they're explaining racism, they're also dodging the bullet. There are all kinds of racisms in this world. And one form of it has to do with how attitudes formed, or they may be good attitudes or bad attitudes, are then transferred to individuals who adopt these attitudes as, you know, working knowledge. There's no reason for people to believe that I am a racist because you are a racist and we share something in common. We share a common ancestry. We share a common culture. There's no reason for that. Your attitudes are wrong, and you were given, I made sure, I gave you a hint as clear as day that you just made an error, that if you have some sense, you would back up and fix it. Not double down on it in the hope that somebody would be intimidated, somebody including myself would be intimidated by the notion that you're very nationalistic and very Afrocentric. No, that does not intimidate me. You're either making sense or you're not. You weren't making sense. I gave you an opportunity to fix it, as any smart individual would do.
Well, yes, I recall that. I recall that vividly. But you know, I'll go back and listen again, because maybe I'm mistaken. But I'll go back and listen again. But from my memory, from my recall, you know, I didn't get the impression as though malice was meant, that somebody.
No, it's not about malice. It has nothing to do with malice. It has something to do with manners.
Yeah, but
manners,
yeah, but,
not
no,
malice.
But, yeah. But what I'm saying is that this the person I recall saying this thing, and you trying to correct them, right, seem to be stumbling over what they were saying and trying to hold on to what they wanted to say, you know, because when you get on the radio, people get nervous and that type of thing. And I got that impression. I didn't see anything wrong with it, and I think that you were maybe overcorrecting.
But I was not correcting anybody. That's the whole point. I felt comfortable with the idea that being a mature individual, an experienced individual, you would know that you're in the wrong and you need to fix it. And you didn't fix it. Well, music is on, which means I gotta go off. So thank you so much for contributing today. We'll see you again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Sooner or later, you're gonna have to stand up tall. Sooner or later, when your back's against that wall. Sooner or later, you'll have to be the one you are. And you just might find that you're out of time, and it's just too late.